Monitor, the best weekend companion for the whole family. The Jimmy Wisner sound in the background with La Playa. Industry has come up with a classification code for movies. Why? Well, Jack Valenti, president of the Motion Picture Association of America, explains.
Its primary objective is a concern for children and a demand and a willingness on our part to describe as accurately and as honestly as we can the content of a movie. Not whether it's good or bad, excellent or inept, but rather whether or not it's the kind of movie that a parent might find objectionable material in it for his children. And so we're categorizing film based on the material that is suitable for children.
Jack Valenti explains the four categories of film ratings, reveals who will do the rating and how the system will be enforced right after Monitor Music by Harper's Bazaar. It's their latest. I love you, Alice B. Toklas.
I love you, Alice B. Toklas. And so does Gertrude Stein. I love you, Alice B. Toklas. I'm gonna change your name to mine. Red velvet trees and lions, spreading lions, candy witches, eating leechy leaves, spinning rainbowing lines. Oh, yeah.
Following years of angry, bitter debate, the motion picture industry has announced a self-policing film classification system which restricts admission of children to some films. Our monitor guest right now is best qualified to explain the new system, what prompted it, and what it means in the future for every moviegoer. He is Jack Valenti, president of the Motion Picture Association of America. We're pleased to have you with us on monitor, Mr. Valenti, and would you explain first, in detail, precisely how films will be rated and what the ratings mean?
There are four rating categories. The first one is G. The symbol, the letter G, will signify suggested for general audiences. It means there's no objectionable material. Really fine films will be in this category. For example, Man for All Seasons would no doubt be in this category. Beckett. Probably if we were rating these pictures, Funny Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Star, perhaps Shoes of the Fisherman. I don't know. I'm just making a personal judgment.
Mm-hmm.
The second category, M, suggested for mature young people. And this says to the parent, look, Mr. Parent, this picture may contain some material or some scenes that you might find objectionable, but perhaps you won't. You make the judgment. Find out all you can about this picture before you willy-nilly take your children in to see it. There are no restrictions.
This pretty much follows the category which has already been in existence called suggestible mature audience.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
The third category now is, it's called R, and it means restricted. Children under the age of 16 would be excluded from the motion picture unless accompanied by a parent or an adult guardian. And what this means is we say to the parent, this is an adult picture, Mr. Parent. Therefore, we want you to know about it. Now, many of these pictures, Mr. Parent, you may want to have your children with you so you can explain it to them. There are a number of pictures which have a message, and a child might or should know about it. And if you're there to explain it, fine. We'll let you take him in. The fourth category is X. And this is so patently an adult film that we exclude children under the age of 16 regardless.
One question, Mr. Valenti, regarding the procedures for this classification. Who will assign these classifications?
This will be done in California by a group of men who have, for many years, administered the so-called Motion Picture Production Code.
Mm-hmm.
These men have from 3 years to 30 years experience in appraising films and by instinct and experience being able to sense scenes which might have objectionable material. They understand the creative process. They're men of great knowledge and experience in this business. Now, we're going to expand this group. We're going to add a woman with a background in child psychology and probably one to two other people so that we can open up a New York branch of this and view pictures on both coasts.
How would I, as a typical moviegoer, know what the rating was on a given film?
A good question. You'll know by reading the advertisement of the film. All advertising of pictures submitted to the rating board will carry in the advertising this rating symbol. I have also sent to every daily and weekly newspaper in the United States, some 13,000, sent them mats to run in their paper, two column and one column legends, which show what these symbols are and what they mean so that the public will know. I'm hopeful that newspapers will cooperate as a public service to their readers
mm-hmm.
and put this on their amusement page every day so that after a while, when you see in the ads a G or an R or an M or an X, the public eventually will become educated as to what it means and know how to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
These symbols do not rate excellence, mm-hmm. quality, or the lack of it, but rather what's in the picture.
As to content, rather.
That's
than
right. We make no judgment as to quality. Now, that is a hornet's nest, and I don't want to get involved in that.
Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thank you.
Our monitor guest has been Jack Valenti, president of the Motion Picture Association of America, who's given us a close-up look at the film industry's new rating and classification system for movies going into effect November 1st. You'll always find the newsmakers and the best music makers right here on the Monitor Beacon. What's a good time? 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. That's a good time, and you'll have one when you join me, Big Wilson, weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. right here on WNBC Radio 66 New York.
Now that you've learned what living is all about, volunteers in service to America are needed now to help in the war on poverty. Vista volunteers live where the poor live. They teach some of the lessons they've learned in their own lives. Their work is paying off. Come out of retirement into the poverty fight. Write Vista, Box 7, Washington, D.C.
WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
Monitor continues. There'll be a little extra safety commercial with some of the 1969 model automobiles. It'll come in the form of safety tips on rearview mirrors, safety belts, stopping distances, and so on. It'll be very soft sell, sandwiched between musical selections on the complimentary cartridges which come with cars that have stereo tape players. So, following wall-to-wall Tiny Tim selections, there'll be a few tiny reminders just to help you stay alive there on the road. At 17 minutes after the monitor hour, here's the voice of Glenn Campbell.
I am a lineman for the county, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another.
Ever happened to you?
You're at this party and you finally get next to the prettiest girl there. So you say, how about us two cutting out? And she says,
I'll have to ask your boss.
And you say, why? And she says,
because he's my date.
Oh, but you still wonder what might have happened if your cigarette ash didn't burn her dress, which burned her, which cooled everything.
Are there any other reasons not to smoke cigarettes? Ask your American Cancer Society.
You know, it seems as if the United States is slowly but surely acquiring all of Great Britain's most prized possession. First, London Bridge. Then the Queen Mary. Now, the Queen Elizabeth. The world's longest ocean liner. Longer, in fact, than the Eiffel Tower. The Elizabeth has been purchased by the state of Florida. Her skipper, Commodore Jeffrey Marr, has been aboard for 21 years, having joined the ship as first officer in 1947. He speculates on the luxury liner's future and recalls some of her past as he chats with Monitor reporter Jay Miller.
Now it's definite that the Queen Elizabeth is not going to Philadelphia as was originally planned. What are the best odds on what will happen to her?
Well, I think it now is virtually certain. In fact, almost 100% certain that she will end her days in Port Everglades in Florida.
doing what? Being a motel, a convention center, or what?
This, I think, is still under a certain amount of debate. I understand there are plans to open her quite shortly as a hotel, but also as a tourist attraction for people who would like to see round the ship. I think this ship had an air of solid comfort and luxury that may never be seen again, and I think that the same thing could be said of the Queen Elizabeth as once said of Sir Winston Churchill. We shall never see her like again.
Now, there's been some speculation that this ship, the Queen Elizabeth, might possibly end up as a gambling ship. What about that?
I think this is virtually impossible. I understand under the conditions of her sale, she is being sold to the state of Florida, where, of course, gambling is not allowed, and I think that once she's there, the chances of her ever moving to another location could be absolutely ruled out.
I heard one very interesting plan is that if she goes to Florida, she might be considered a sort of a floating salesroom for British goods that might have British automobiles and British tweeds and woolens, and in fact, somebody might even build a proper British pub on board.
I think, though, it would be a very good thing to try and create on board here a little bit of Britain in Florida, so to speak, and to use the ship's obvious attraction to promote British trade in that part of the world.
Her ties with the United States are almost as strong as her ties with Britain. The ship was secretly brought from the United Kingdom to the United States for outfitting during the war, and then ended up hauling 15,000 troops at a time, didn't she?
That is quite correct, yes. And I think the romantic attachment, shall we say, of Americans for the Queens is almost as great as that in which they held in Britain.
Do you sometimes feel that instead of a ship, you're steering a stately home?
Well, I like to think that. I always was amused by the crack that Lady Peel or Beatrice Lilly once made when she asked her stewardess, "What time does this place reach New York?"
Well, thank you very much, Commodore Jeffrey Marr, for the interview, and may we wish you, in whatever role you end up in Florida or wherever, may we wish you smooth sailing.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Miller. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
Jay Miller for Monitor.
Meet a Joe on Monitor. An Olympic brief, Margitta Gummel and Marita Lang, both of East Germany, finished 1-2 in the Olympic women's shot put. Nadzara Chisosa of Russia was third. Miss Gummel's winning toss of 64 feet 4 inches established a world record. Three other world records were set in track today, all by the United States, which won the men's 400 and 1600 meter relays and the women's 400 meter relay. You know, amazingly enough, the Olympic athletes who are in the greatest danger of getting dry, chapped lips are the swimmers. The combination of harsh chemicals in the water, sun glare, and water itself is murder on lips. One good reason why Chapstick lip balm was selected for use by the U.S. Olympic team. Chapstick protects lips from the effects of sun, wind, and even harsh chemicals, and it soothes and helps heal lips that are already chapped too. Pick up a tube of Chapstick wherever you shop, and don't take your lips anywhere without it. Orchestra playing The Odd Couple. Monitor reaching all America on NBC Radio. Serving Dubuque, Iowa, KDTH. The NBC station nearest you has reserved the next few minutes, after which Monitor comes right back. Brad Crandall here.
Come on, now soft it to me, sing me a song. Let's keep the music groovy, we're going strong. Come on, little.
Your host, Brad Crandall. Sunday, October 20th, another exciting and eventful day in sports. We'll have all of today's scores and stories and a preview of the week ahead coming up shortly. Monitor music now, new from the Letterman.
Thank you.
Monitor Sports Desk now, Frank Messer. Thanks, Brad. The United States won four more Olympic gold medals in track and field today, but missed the one it's been shooting at for the past 60 years, the 1,500 meters. Kenya's Kipchoge Keino won it by about 30 yards from a disappointed Jim Ryan of the United States, with Bodo Tumler of West Germany third. Keino stole the race. He opened up a large early lead and was able to hold off Ryan's feared finishing kick, 55.2 on the final lap. The winning time, 334.9, the second fastest in history at any altitude. Only Ryan's 333.1 world record is better. Ryan ran 337.8 today. The other U.S. entries, Tom Van Ruden and Marty Liquori, finished 9th and 12th respectively. The U.S. won all three relays, each in world record time. Charlie Green, Mel Pender, Ronnie Ray Smith, and Jimmy Hines took the men's 400 in 38.2, with anchorman Hines making up a two-yard deficit to beat Cuba and France. Vince Matthews, Ron Freeman, Larry James, and Lee Evans won the men's 1,600-meter relay in the incredible time of 2:56.1. Kenya was second, beaten by about 40 yards. And the U.S. won the women's 400-meter relay in 42.8, running with Barbara Farrell, Margaret Bales, Mildred Netter, and Wyoming Tyus in that order. Cuba took the silver and Russia the bronze. Dick Fosbury, using the Fosbury flop, won the high jump for the United States, with teammate Ed Carruthers second and Russia's Valentin Gavrilov third. Fosbury, who jumps over the bar backwards, cleared 7 feet, 4 1/4 inches. He failed in three attempts at 7 6 1/4. Carruthers cleared 7 3 1/2 for the silver medal. The grueling marathon, 26 miles, 385 yards, was won by Ethiopia's Mamo Woldi, who supplanted his countryman, Abebe Bikila, as gold medalist. Woldi, who was third in the 10,000 meters, finished in 2 hours, 20 minutes, 26 and 4-tenths seconds. Japan's Kenji Kimihara was second, and New Zealander Mike Ryan third. Gold medal number 21 for the United States came in diving. The winner, Bernie Wrightson. Italy's Klaus DiBiase was second, and Jim Henry of the U.S. third. And that's our Olympic report, Brad. Back soon with the Pro Football Roundup.
All right, Frank, thank you. Here's 2 minutes and 35 seconds of Monitor music in the voice of Bobby Goldsboro.
Sometimes I imagine myself as a drifter, seeker of fortunes, connoisseur of great wine, dashing through meadows of yellow and green, trying to catch the impossible dream, leaving the straight life behind. Sometimes my thoughts may find me in Mexico, drinking tequila, going out of my mind, having a ball on a couple of balls, treating the ladies to corn on the cob, leaving the straight life behind. Suddenly all my silly thoughts disappear. Behind. I can just see me on a tropical island, riding the surf and drinking coconut wine, having me fun with golden girls in the sand, chasing the sun through an innocent land, leaving the straight life behind. Suddenly all my silly thoughts disappear.
And now once again to the Monitor Sports Desk and Frank Messer.
Right, Brad, and here's the Pro Football Roundup. In the AFL, Boston 23, Buffalo 6, Miami 24, Cincinnati 22, Kansas City 24, Oakland 10, New York Jets 20, Houston 14, San Diego 55, Denver 24. Johnny Hadle tossed 5 touchdown passes.
In the NFL, Cleveland knocked Baltimore from the unbeaten ranks 30-20. St. Louis 41, Washington 14, San Francisco 26, New York Giants 10. Unbeaten Dallas 20, Minnesota 7. Green Bay and Detroit played a 14-all tie. New Orleans 16, winless Pittsburgh 12, Chicago 29, winless Philadelphia 16, unbeaten Los Angeles 27, Atlanta 14. The World Series is finally over. You say you already know that? But I'm talking about the Japanese World Series. The Yomiuri Giants of Tokyo won it today, beating the Yonkyu Braves of Osaka 4-2. And if you think that wraps up the 1968 baseball season for good, well, don't bet on it. You see, the St. Louis Cardinals fly to Japan Tuesday for an 18-game, 33-day tour. Elsewhere on the coming week's schedule, world welterweight boxing champion Curtis Cox defends against Argentina's Ramon La Cruz in New Orleans tomorrow night. Thursday, the Scotch Foursome Invitation Golf Tournament in Encinitas, California. Saturday, the $100,000 added Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont Park. And the Messenger Stakes at Roosevelt Raceway, the richest harness race in history. And next Sunday, the closing ceremony of the 19th Summer Olympics. And that's what is and will be in sports, Brad. Frank Messer here. For more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Thank you, Frank, but I wish you hadn't told me. I had a bundle on Osaka. In 1 minute, another progress report on the flight of Apollo 7, so stay on the Monitor Beacon.
Before winter closes in on the New York State countryside, take a trip on the Adirondack Northway. A portion of the Northway, or Route 87, was sited last year as America's most scenic new highway. This year, a section in Essex County received an additional award for continuing excellence of design and construction. The New York State Commerce Department recommends an autumn drive along the Northway. And if you have time, continue on to the new St. Lawrence Scenic Highway.
You may know a lot about your profession, sir, but let me tell you one thing. Don't come in here and tell me how to run this show.
Well, I don't try to, John, but every now and then you do need a little help. After all, you're...
Just one moment. If you don't like it on this show, you know the door. It works both ways. You can come in or you can go out. And I think at this point you should be going out. Sometimes the Long John Neville Show comes to you in livid color. This is Long John inviting you to join me midnights right here on WNBC Radio 66 New York.
WNBC Radio 66 New York.
This is NBC News, the flight of Apollo 7. Jay Barbary reporting from the NBC News Apollo Space Center. Apollo 7 is now over the Pacific Ocean in communications contact with the Guam tracking station on its 142nd trip around Earth, with all going well. A short while ago, capsule communicator astronaut Ron Evans radioed some pro football scores to Walt Cunningham during a shift change aboard the Apollo 7.
L.A. beat Atlanta 27-14.
Roger, they still have defeated it, huh?
I assume so. San Diego over Denver, 41-17.
Okay, I'm going to bed. Good night, Ron.
Roger, good night. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hello, Dale.
Hey, good morning.
How the Oilers do?
Not too well. They lost to New York 14-20.
Oh.
Roger, you better check your food. Wally said that he was one meal short there, and not quite sure where he's going to get it, so you better check your food and see if he's eating yours.
Yeah, thanks for the tip. I'll be keeping an eye on him.
Okay.
I don't know what he did while I was asleep.
As you heard, astronaut Don Isley is awake and on duty at this moment, inventorying the food pantry. Jay Barbary reporting from the NBC News Apollo Space Center. Stay tuned to NBC Radio for continuing progress reports on the flight of our Apollo 7 astronauts. And be sure to follow the recovery of the Apollo spacecraft early Tuesday morning on NBC Radio and Color TV.
Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end.
Mary Hopkin, 18 years old, blonde from the little town of Pontwood, Wales, and a discovery of the Beatles' Paul McCartney. Her first album is expected to be released before Christmas. Friends and associates of the famous and celebrated are always asked, but what is he really like? Well, maybe the most intimate glimpse of a personality is best gained from a member of his own family. Vice President Humphrey's 26-year-old son, Hubert Skip Humphrey, is a senior at the University of Minnesota Law School, married, and the father of two children, but he still remembers his own childhood and the important part his father contributed to it, as he chats with Monitor reporter Don Bueller in Minnesota.
Were you able to play with your dad? Were you able to visit with him? Did he play football or softball with you, or anything of this type?
Oh, yes, and particularly basketball. In actually, we set up a basketball court. We widened our driveway and put up a big basketball net, and used to play every single evening, and in particular basketball with my father. He's pretty good at it. And we also played football and a little bit of baseball, but in that sense, we really did have a lot of sports, and he was always encouraging us to move into sports and to take part in it, and was always encouraged when we made teams or went on various athletic teams at our schools, etc. And so, but also in terms of discussions, I can't tell you how many political discussions he and I have had. Particularly when I went to college, I went to American University in Washington, D.C., and during the first year I lived at home, and then during the other 3 years I moved away and lived in an apartment with some fellow classmates. But we had many long hours after school, and perhaps sometimes right down in the Senate office, because we'd go down after school. We had some night classes down in Washington, and he'd go out to a late dinner or have a late snack with us, and we'd be there for hours talking.
What's he like at Waverly?
Well, now that again, it's an amazing thing, because my father really puts his entire energy into whatever he's doing. And in terms of work, it means long hours and hard work all the time. But when he decides to relax, it's a complete transition. He'll land in the helicopter out at Waverly, and literally within 10 minutes, he's a completely changed person. And we're talking, he walks around the lake area and checking up on how things are going and what needs to be done, and fixing fences and tinkering with his antique automobiles. And it's a really a complete change, and a really a wonderful thing that can happen to a man who works as long as he does all during the week, and then perhaps on one day, one afternoon, just to change and to really relax.
At home, tell us about your father over the past years as a disciplinarian. Is it verbal, or is it physical, or is it both?
Well, I think you went in the right direction anyway. It's first of all verbal. First of all, it's verbal in terms of my mother. My mother really took care of the family to a great extent, because my father was gone so many times. The final word was, when your father gets home, you know. And then when he did come home, as I said, there was verbal. And if the verbal didn't reach a solution, if there wasn't some way in which our complaints or our passions or the problem could be solved, there was a rather abrupt physical implant, and many times very stinging. But I must say, he's reasonable in the sense of wanting to solve a problem and listening to both sides. But when it comes to a matter of authority, there is, it's his house, and it's mom's house, and in that sense, you know, you've got to stick with it. I can remember that hard steel back of that brush. It really was it used to sit up there in his bathroom, and I could sure remember it.
Hubert H. Humphrey III, better known to his friends as Skip, recalling his youth and his upbringing at a time when he never dreamed his father would become the nation's vice president and ultimately be a candidate for the presidency. Now a Monitor News special. Jacqueline Kennedy became Mrs. Aristotle Anassis today in a private double ring ceremony in a tiny chapel on the Greek island of Scorpios. For a special report, here is Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Athens.
A folk tradition in Greece has it that couples married on a rainy day are in for good luck. Rainy days are not that frequent in this self-styled land of sunshine. But the storm of the season burst over Scorpios Island today, and the superstitious would call it a good omen for the future of 39-year-old Jacqueline Kennedy and her 62-year-old husband, Aristotle Anassis. As a long, solemn wedding ceremony proceeded this afternoon, the wind got gustier, the rain came down, and the sea churned white. The weather, with its implied silver lining, not only brought out rarely seen overcoats and umbrellas, it may have had a role in plans for the honeymoon. Those plans are still discreetly withheld. But a few more hours of the nor'easter may convince the honeymooners to get on the ever-available Onassis yacht and escape somewhere to the south where the sun may still be found. Because of the weather, among other factors, newsmen clamoring to witness the wedding were daunted. So the ceremony, all things considered, turned out to be about as intimate as a retiring couple of such renown might have arranged. Only about 40 guests were present. The local inhabitants who worked for the bridegroom kept their distance, and the merely curious were out of sight. This is the way the couple wanted it. This is one reason the setting was so isolated. For those close to the family who did watch the ceremony, a few vignettes stand out. They tell of the sight of the bridegroom kissing the bride on both cheeks, the bride welling tears at the exchange of rings, tears described as joyful, and the sight of the two Kennedy children, witnesses to so much high tragedy, participating in a colorful ancient ceremony, the likes of which they had never imagined. The whole saga has been one nearly nobody had ever imagined. Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Athens.
For all developing news, national and international, always stay tuned to Monitor. The Null sound in today's music, both the American country sound and the British pop sound, are included this week among the highlights of the Null program, Monday through Friday on NBC Radio. Host Roscoe talks with country singers Bobby Gentry and Glenn Campbell tomorrow. On Thursday, British pop stars Tom Jones and Engelbert Humperdinck drop by to chat with Roscoe. Other guests this week include Sybil Burton, Skitch Henderson, and Tony Curtis. Get the Null habit now, every weekday afternoon, on NBC Radio. Of Roger Williams, and the song is called Only for Lovers. What follows is for everyone, everyone who wants to keep up with the names and events which affect the lives of us all. NBC Monitor News on the Hour covers it all, so stay tuned. This is Brad Crandall.
Don't go away, there's more to come, more to interest everyone. Just stay tuned, we'll be back soon with more.
Smokey Bear, help Smokey the fire prevent him there. Smokey says, won't you please, oh please, join the fight to protect our lovely trees. Let's all learn the special ABCs of Smokey the fire prevent him there. A.
Always hold matches till cold.
B.
Be sure you drown fires out with water.
C.
Crush all smokes dead out in an ashtray.
This is Engelbert Humperdinck inviting you to listen to Charlie Brown right here on WNBC Radio. Charlie Brown? What a funny name.
So what's so funny about Charlie Brown? Listen weekdays from 3 until 7 p.m. on WNBC. Engelbert Humperdinck? Keeping up with Long John Neville means you've made it. Late for work. Long John Neville, midnights on WNBC, Radio 66, New York.